From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, a Hollywood story that went from rags to riches, back to rags again, might have a happy ending after all. We talk to the controversial director of The Boondock Saints. Plus, with the indie world under siege, what went on at the American film market? We talk to Troma Entertainment's Lloyd Kaufman. But first, the Hollywood news banter. Stay close, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by banterer John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hi, John.
Hi, Kim.
So this week, virtually everything that we're going to talk about relates to the revolution. The revolution is coming. The revolution in how we watch movies. How, where, when.
I would argue, too, what kind of movies we watch as well.
Let's start with Disney. Disney has had a big shakeup. First of all, at the top, they have dispatched their chief financial officer, Tom Staggs, to the theme parks. The theme park guy, Jay Rasulo, to a job in the corporate office. And it looks very much as though Tom Staggs, a very influential guy with Bob Iger, is being groomed as a successor to Bob Iger. And what is also clear is that Sony wanted to sell the DVD of This Is It release it much more quickly after its theatrical run than they would normally do to take advantage
right.
of
Michael
the holidays.
Michael Jackson as a stocking stuffer.
Exactly. That's heartwarming.
It sounds kind of kinky in some way.
And so they didn't do that. They gave in when the theaters complained. But what they did do is they're going to offer certain customers who have internet-enabled televisions or certain Blu-ray players, you will be able to stream Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs for $24.95 less than 3 months after it ran in the theaters, which is before the DVD will come out. And of course, once again, the theater owners are very much in the crosshairs here. And it's a very, very difficult time for the studios because there are, as we've discussed previously, a lot of old guard people feel that this is going to fail. You must have a theatrical platform that's protected. And if you start doing this, get it whenever you want, we want, wherever you want, how will people differentiate one movie from another? How will they figure out how to, is there enough money? You're going to pay that much to see the movie on your handheld device that's going to make up for a chain that's existed for years.
Well, and I think the other thing that you have to anticipate is so much of the foreign distribution deals are contingent on meaningful theatrical distribution. So if movies are not getting released theatrically, all of the money that comes into Hollywood from foreign pre-sales or foreign distribution deals is going to go away because they are contingent on meaningful theatrical deals. And if they don't get it anymore, those fees are going to go down, you know, substantially.
And there, you know, another point you mentioned, A Christmas Carol, all this time they've been saying to the theaters, hey, guys, put in 3D and we will be your friends. People will come and it'll be great. And now they're looking at A Christmas Carol losing all this money. And they're like, you know what? We're going to release our movies whenever we want to. And, you know, you guys fend for yourselves. I think this is like a war going on.
I think it is, too. But I think also if Christmas Carol didn't work, if Avatar is now going to, you know, everybody's going to look to Avatar. If it can't save
absolutely
3D and if it can't save the theatrical experience, then I don't know that any movie can. I mean, this is Jim Cameron's first movie in 12 years. More than $300 million film. If that movie somehow, and I think that's doubtful, but if it somehow doesn't work theatrically, then God knows what's going to happen next.
And John, you've got a story cooking about the cost and the stakes with Avatar.
I mean, this is probably, when you count the marketing and production budgets, this is, I think, the most expensive movie in Hollywood history. Our story has got it about $460 million. And I think in some ways it could revolutionize the way movies are made. And we'll see. I mean, it's an incredibly ambitious artistic enterprise as well. It's not just the money that's at risk. It's Jim Cameron trying to invent how 3D animation, live action movies are made. And I think there's a lot riding on this film besides Fox's investment in it.
One way or the other, the revolution is underway. We're just not sure how it's going to, what the revolution is going to be exactly yet.
But that's what makes it exciting.
It's exciting. It's scary. I think that's all the banter we have time for. So thank you, John.
Always a pleasure, Kim.
In 1997, the town was abuzz with the only in Hollywood story of Troy Duffy.
Now a classic story of the Hollywood dream coming true from bartender to movie maker overnight with the bar thrown in as a bonus. Patrick Healy is live in West Hollywood with details.
Jess, we've all heard the legend of actress Lana Turner being discovered in a soda fountain. So what's wrong with a saloon being remembered as the launching pad for Hollywood's newest wonder kid?
If you don't recognize the unshaven guy in the shades, or if you've never heard the name Troy Duffy, don't feel left out. But that's changing real fast. On the front page of The Hollywood Reporter is Filmland's newest find. Only this Cinderella is a tough guy bartender and bouncer from Boston whose very first script just got him a near $1 million deal with Miramax Films, the outfit that just cleaned up on Oscar night.
I never thought for a second that it would happen so quickly.
His script, The Boondock Saints, is about a couple of Boston brothers who take it on themselves to eliminate evil. Pulp fiction with soul is the best analogy one of the producers could come up with.
But Duffy bought into his own hype, and he turned into a Hollywood nightmare.
I said, I want to talk to your f***ing client, and don't sit there and call me a f***ing liar when you don't know what the f*** you're talking about. I did not understand, I did not realize that he made any kind of pay or f***ing play offer to anybody. I have not spoken with the f***ing man.
The clips you just heard were from the documentary Overnight, the cringe-inducing chronicle of Duffy's overnight success and total disintegration. In the end, Harvey Weinstein, Troy Duffy's great champion, walked away from the deal and left Duffy twisting in the wind. By sheer force of will, Duffy managed to get The Boondock Saints made, and it went on to become a cult classic on DVD. Now, a decade later, Troy Duffy is back with a sequel, The Boondock Saints 2. All Saints Day.
Something's happened. And shepherds we shall be. For thee, my Lord, for thee. Power hath descended forth from thy hand, that our feet may swiftly carry out thy command. In nomine Patris Filii, Spiritus Sancti.
What do you think?
I think Yakov had to kill a good man just to send us a message.
Let's send him one right back. Cried to my daddy on the telephone. How long now? Let's do some gratuitous violence.
Unlike the original, the sequel had a real theatrical release on October 30th, though only on about 70 screens. But it's been generating respectable returns. Matt Holzman spoke with Troy Duffy about making a comeback in an unforgiving business.
Troy, whether or not the facts of the documentary Overnight are true, that is the way in which many people, probably more people, will know you than any other way. So what would you say to the people who have seen the documentary and have kind of judged you by what they saw there?
I'd say that watch it again and this time try to do it objectively. You know, I know what that was. It's not really an argument for me. I'm not saying I think it's a deception. I know it is a deception from front to back. I was there when all that shit happened. What these guys did was unconscionable. Two of my friends came to me, asked me for permission to film this documentary about me and all the rest of the guys and everything we were doing. And we granted them that permission for one reason only. They were our friends.
Aside from the fact that you just let them do it, though, mm-hmm. what's your, as the 12-steppers say, what was your part in it?
Oh, I will totally take it on the chin for misbehaving at times, making the wrong decision sometimes. That happened, you know, fairly often during the three-year period. The point is I made just enough right decisions and did just enough things right to accomplish my goals. Doing a movie and a record for your band as starting a newbie in this industry straight out of the gate is a tall order for anybody. We did them both. We accomplished what we set out to do. And you don't know what that story is. You have no idea how we got there by watching that documentary.
Be that as it may, since so many people in Hollywood know you from the documentary and not necessarily don't know you personally or don't know what else that you've been doing or the rest of the story, how did it affect your ability to continue to work in the business?
Well, it certainly didn't do me any favors, you know. I mean, when you can go rent at any Blockbuster 2 hours of me acting like a complete jerk off, that doesn't speak well to the studio heads. What happened with Boondock Saints My first film was that it garnered a cult audience and became the largest cult classic, highest grossing cult classic in the last decade. Every year the numbers go up on Boondock. So pretty soon,
DVD sales.
Yeah, and pretty soon it just became financially irresponsible for them not to do it. So it wasn't some big cathartic, we'll forgive Troy. They didn't ultimately just condemn me at all. That's the feeling I got anyway. They all asked me about it, but almost in a passing way. They were much more interested in the bottom line, which was that Boondock was a financial juggernaut. Let's make a sequel.
Did you feel like you were being sized up in terms of your personality? Did they not care? Did they ask you to explain? What happened when you had those meetings?
No, I felt it in the room. It was an elephant, but it was like a small one, and it wasn't in the center. It was kind of in the corner. It was one of those things where they were concerned about it, and I could tell they wanted to ask me about it, and sometimes they didn't, so I'd bring it up myself, like, hey, you know, because they feel like, well, if that's the way this guy really is in this documentary, how come he's behaving himself so well? And, you know, what we're seeing right now is not what we saw then.
Is he medicated?
Yeah. Things like that documentary don't help, but it's actually starting to turn around now. Now I'm the controversial director who's butting heads with Hollywood, you know, which isn't really that true, but I'll take it, you know.
Well, where did it leave you? So now the Boondock Saints came out, the documentary came out. Where did that leave you?
That was a very dark time in my life because we were also involved in a lawsuit against the company that made Boondock One, many of the distributors and the bank that financed the loan for Boondock One. We were suing everybody.
For what? And why?
For not giving us the money that we were entitled to, in our opinions. We had a contract. It said this. We knew the film was much more successful and had recouped its $6 million budget. We felt that on the internet, on the blockbuster numbers and stuff like that. We knew we had a hit on our hands here, and we weren't making any money.
But according to the documentary, you didn't have any of the rights to ancillary revenue from the DVD.
That is simply incorrect. We made a contract that said we were to be paid like everybody else. I mean, even suggesting that is just stupid. Why the hell would anybody give up everything when they're making a movie? Why would any of these actors come down if there wasn't back-end deals?
Well, because maybe you didn't know better. Maybe because you didn't have any leverage.
I had William Morris as my agency and Barnes Morris, Klein & Yorn as my lawyers. These are veterans in the business. Right. They know what they're doing. They're not going to let their new client get hung out to dry. It simply is not true.
So did you just get caught up in that classic Hollywood accounting, or was it something that had specifically to do with your deal?
I must tell you that after 5 years of fighting through that lawsuit, and of course the documentary dropped right in those 5 years, so it was like a great double kick to the ball sack.
Oh, dear.
That was a financially and emotionally draining thing. What happened was there's a confidentiality order in place, so I can't tell you a bunch of things. But I can tell you the following. Everybody that we sued, individuals and companies, settled with us out of court for undisclosed amounts. So you can make your own suppositions from that. But it was just one of those things because the real frustrating part about it was the sequel rights were tied up into that lawsuit, and we could not move forward until it was resolved. And there was this feeling on our side that they want us to drop the lawsuit and then they'll let the sequel go. That type of a thing, you know? There's no real, like, proof of that, but we felt that that was what was going on.
But in the interim period while you were fighting this lawsuit, did you write a script?
I wrote 5 scripts. Yeah, I was writing my ass off.
And how did you possibly get through that time emotionally and financially? You needed to pay lawyers. How did you do it?
Emotionally, I had my wife and my 2 dogs, who are my life, and financially, we opened up a website and sold Boondock merchandise to the fan base, and then eventually made a deal with several retailers like Hot Topic stores and stuff like that to sell our merchandise. And that's when sort of larger checks started rolling in. So now, that's how we kind of got through that time.
If you're just joining us, Matt Holzman is talking to Troy Duffy, writer and director of The Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day, which just came out in theaters. He became an overnight success in 1997 when Miramax gave him a massive deal for the first Boondock Saints. And then things fell apart.
I would think that in the interim, though, while you were going through all this other stuff, that you might have gotten some other writing or directing gigs.
There was a couple of offers on sort of B-level movies that even though I really could have used the money at the time, I knew that the desires for my career that I have for my career rested in Boondock. I don't want to follow that up with some B-level thing that's going to go straight to video, you know? So as difficult as it was and as much as I needed the money at the time, I had to turn down both those offers.
Hmm. So you've actually been living off the money from the merchandising.
Correct.
And the lawsuit is now closed. You were able to go forward. When that lawsuit finally was concluded and it was found to some degree in your favor and you were able to start working in the second movie, had you been in contact with the players from the first movie? And did you say?
Once the rights became available at noon at 12:01, we had a deal. It had already been drafted, you know, weeks before, going back and forth.
Including the actors?
Well, the actors, I mean, everybody's like, a lot of reporters have asked me, how'd you get all the actors to return? They never went anywhere. These guys were calling me going, when are we doing this? Over this last 10-year period, they were all loaded and ready as soon as, it was just a phone call. That's how I got them all back.
In the first day that you did a table read, was it after everything that's gone on, was there, when everyone walked in the room and sat down with the scripts at a table, what'd that feel like?
That didn't happen, unfortunately. Boondock 2 was the most pressure I have ever been under in making a film. We didn't have time for even like a high five. We did it after 10 years. It was work from the second our feet hit the ground in Toronto. So there was no table read. There was very little time for rehearsal for the actors. They had to sort of band together and do that on their own a lot. Often they got 1 to 3 takes and that's it. We had to move on.
But was there no, let's say on the first day of shooting, though, was there a sense of, did you want to kind of turn around towards Hollywood and kind of give a big,
well,
that was,
I mean,
me making
my,
an obscene gesture.
In my heart of hearts, yeah, you want to turn around and go, oh, f*** you all, you know? But that was sort of the old Troy, you know? I realized over this 10-year period there's a politic in this business that needs to be played, and it should be played. I wish I had known that back in the day. I reserve my passion for working with actors and on the creative side of the business from now on.
The more volatile Troy.
Volatile Troy is directing the film. The Troy that you're talking to right now about business is the guy talking to the financiers and the producers and stuff like that who are concerned. Those people deserve to be tucked in. They're investing millions of dollars in your film and your output, and they're taking a huge risk, and they deserve to think that, you know, feel that there's a general in charge of this army that's going to win them the war. So if anything, the biggest thing I've learned in the last 10 years is to play the politics of this business and how necessary it truly is.
Well, what's next for you?
In terms of the long ball career, like I said, I wrote 5 scripts. Boondock 1 is down. I have cleverly enough written the scripts in escalating budgets. Therefore, if each one performs, hopefully Hollywood will open up that door wider and wider until my final one of the 4 that are left would be a very large multi tens of millions of dollar movie.
Troy Duffy is the director of the 1999 cult hit Boondock Saints, the sequel Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day. You like that?
All Saints Day.
It's in theaters now. Troy, thanks for taking the time and talking with us on the business.
Been a pleasure.
We'll be back in a minute to talk about the American film market with Lloyd Kaufman, the producer and director of Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, and other indie classics. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Every year, representatives from Kazakhstan TV, the Peruvian theater chains, and just about everywhere else descend on Santa Monica, California, for the American film market. For 7 days, buyers and sellers haggle in a bizarre bazaar for the rights to movies in various states of completion. We're talking thousands of films and hundreds of languages. In recent years, there have been some bigger movies and bigger deals. Byers had a chance to pick up foreign rights to the then-unknown Paranormal Activity last year, and what a deal they got. But for the most part, AFM films are lower-budget genre films, action, horror, thrillers, and broad comedies that play regardless of language or culture.
Are you crying?
Yes?
You can't cry!
It's what I do!
They were the perfect karate family.
I'm standing out in front of the DeRode Foster Care Home, where yesterday, 7 children were brutally murdered.
Smokoju Studio presents an action-style drama.
You fools! This restaurant is built on ancient Tomahawk tribe, sacred Indian burial ground! Get out while you still can! Get out! Save yourselves! Save yourselves!
Those were clips from AFM films All Babes Want to Kill Me, Valla Me America, Oy Vey, My Son is Gay, Dark House, 20 Cigarettes, Holy Man 2, The Adventures of a Rapper Monk, and Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead. And who better to talk about the challenges facing AFM and the world indie business than the director of that last classic, Lloyd Kaufman. He's co-founder and president of Troma Entertainment, purveyor of the goriest, sexiest, silliest send-ups imaginable for the past 35 years. And he's chairman of the Independent Film and Television Alliance, which sponsors the AFM. He's also written a new book called Produce Your Own Damn Movie. Have you been walking around at AFM and feeling a sort of a vibe in the hallways?
Yes, I've met with many of our members and some of us who have been around for a long time. Troma's been here for 35 years. This is certainly the most difficult period we've ever had, and I think I'm not alone. It is a very, very difficult period because you have the conglomerates which have gotten the game changed and the playing field is practically perpendicular against anyone who's independent
right.
and innovative.
Right.
And then you've got the pirates who are
gobbling
up a lot of market share.
Yeah. Yeah.
We make a movie like Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, and the Chinese put it out on DVD with their own artwork, their own menus. They even changed the cast because we hadn't put out our posters or our artwork. And they before we had finished the telecine, we shot on 35, but before we transferred to our good quality video, they already had the movie out.
Well, let's try to do a little bit of then and now. Like,
yes.
Let's say you had a movie like Poultrygeist several years ago. What would have happened then versus how it's changed?
Well, I think I can do better with the Toxic Avenger.
Let's do that.
The first Toxic Avenger probably showed in 2,000 movie theaters in the United States.
What year were we talking about?
82, 83. Uh-huh. The fourth Toxic Avenger, which is the best one, Citizen Toxie, may have played. Thank you. May have played maybe 300 cinemas.
What year?
Just about 20 years later, probably
right.
maybe 2002. I can't.
Right, close enough.
The Citizen Toxie being a better movie, but the theaters now being in the hands of the conglomerates and much more under their control. The theaters that Citizen Toxie played were mainly calendar houses. You know, one theater instead of 50 theaters in a city like New York, which Toxic Avenger played, so you could amortize the advertising. The Citizen Toxie played in one theater in New York. So how much can you spend on one theater? And then next door you've got you know. 8 screens and across the street, 30 screens playing Transformers Part 62, and they're on 200 screens just in one neighborhood of New York. So the theatrical game has totally changed against us.
And how does that affect you?
Well, if we can't get the public to know about our movies, and if we can't get into movie theaters, I make movies for the theater-going public, the 35mm. It's very disappointing for the Troma fans who've been around for 35 years, and it's impossible to show the movies. And it's not just the Troma movies. They're very good movies made all over the world, which nobody knows about. The only way you can see them is at film festivals. That's the reason there are so many film festivals, some of them with goofy titles, because there is a demand. The public would like to see these movies. They're really, really good, and because they are prevented from getting into American movie theaters. Not just American, but British, French, Chinese, all the movie theaters around the world are back in the hands of a small number of people. And then, of course, the TV world is also basically closed to the independents, both cable and free television, especially in the United States of America.
I would guess international sales have been like the mainstay of AFM, right?
The American Film Market, sure, that's what it's all about.
Right. So are those buyers, are they there? Are there fewer of them? Are they I don't know.
You know, I don't have the count, but about the same number of buyers came as registered as last year. But it does seem, and again, it's only anecdotal, it does seem that there are fewer who showed up. And some companies that used to send some of those Asian companies that would send 12 buyers now maybe sending 5, and some companies that sent 2 buyers are now sending 1 guy who goes shopping. You know, so I'm not sure.
With smaller bags of money.
It sure seems that way, yeah. And it's definitely, you know, to some extent, we are a 2-tier independent trade association with the ones who have the big theatrical films perhaps doing well. But again, you know, people play it pretty close to the vest. So, you know, some people who are doing really well are kind of, you know, the hubris thing and don't want to tempt the gods by saying they're doing well. And people who aren't doing well are worried about their banks, so they say they're doing well. So. But I think basically this is the hardest. I can tell you that for Troma Entertainment, which everyone thinks is, which is kind of famous, this is the hardest, most discouraging business climate we've ever had.
Do you have films that you're selling this year?
Yes, we do. We do indeed. Well, Poultrygeist: Night of the Chicken Dead is a big one.
And
I can tell you that, as you say, 10 years ago, we would have been getting hundreds of thousands of dollars for international rights. And I don't think we have taken one deal in 2 years. It's been so terrible. I'm not afraid to say it.
That is terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad.
You really think people can do this and survive at this point? You're struggling, and you're the granddaddy of them.
Well, that's the good news. You see, I majored in Chinese studies at Yale, and what I came out with it is the notion of Taoism, the yin and the yang, and the oyster gets a piece of sand caught in its nether regions.
And it becomes a pearl, yes.
And it's a beautiful, very painful, and blah, blah, blah. Right now, it's very difficult for the business model. And I talk about this. I compare the way I make movies to my wife's 1969 Mustang. Looks nice, works, got new tires, beautiful condition, but put it on the highway and it suddenly overheats and collapses. That's kind of the $500,000 35 millimeter movie. But the good news is that thanks to the democratization of cinema, you can go to Best Buy and buy a $700 HD, a tiny little camera, shoot a movie, and then keep the receipt, return the camera, and get your money back, and make your own damn movie. And it can be really good with your Pro Tools.
But who will see it?
The movies that are really good will pop out of the pack.
I would think you'd be very enchanted with Paranormal Activity, which was made for
$15,000. Yeah, Paranormal Activity was
very good.
It took
a big studio, and they get it
going.
Yeah,
well, they did somehow.
But they somehow
threaded
that needle.
That's the one in a million. Yeah. But they did a good job. I mean, that was a very ingenious use of the no-budget movie. Well, I've seen it. It actually is pretty scary, I thought.
Lloyd Kaufman is co-founder and president of Troma Entertainment and the chairman of the Independent Film and Television Alliance, which sponsors the American Film Market, which just ended. Thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you very, very much. And it was great questions. And read, produce your own damn movie. Now available at fine bookstores everywhere. Is that no? I guess I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry.
We'll
do you have you. Is that a bad thing? To
relentlessly promote your book? And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.